Hi, Tyler.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi. All right, well, let's get right down to it. We'll start with
Let's do
your
it.
year of graduation and your major.
Sure. I believe I graduated from Berkeley in 2006, and I was a professional music major with a focus on business management and songwriting.
But your official major was pro music.
Yes.
Okay, as opposed to double majoring in business and songwriting.
Right, right, right.
Cool. And what was your principal instrument?
Voice.
Excellent. You never
Yeah.
lose that. Well, hopefully you never lose that. All
Only
right.
when laryngitis strikes.
Right. So let's start. Describe your current job. What
Sure.
do you do?
So I am a strategic planner or strategist, depending on different people like to call it different things in the advertising world. So often I get asked the question, okay, in Mad Men, which character are you? And my answer is my role did not exist in the age of Mad Men, but it would be kind of a hybrid of the creative team and the research team that comes up with strategy. It's a very interesting role that I kind of stumbled into through grad school. And there's, you know, I love it. There's a lot of creativity involved, which I think most Berkeley grads probably have some creative blood running through their veins. But I've been in the biz about 6 years now. Tried to stray, but it called me back.
All right. Where do you work?
I work at an ad agency in Miami, my hometown, called The Community. It used to be La Comunidad, but as the world is becoming more and more multicultural, they decided to go with the name change to reflect how they're becoming less of a niche kind of Hispanic multicultural agency and more of a total market agency.
Great. How large an agency is it?
I think we are at a little over 100 people. It was started by a couple of Argentinian brothers 10 years ago, but the growth over the past, I'd say probably 2 years, has been astronomical with wins of, you know, Verizon, BMW, Kroger, a lot of big clients.
Wow.
So we're a small team as far as the agency world goes, but lots of hustlers.
And how long have you been at that job?
I started back in October. I was living in Chicago for a while.
Gotcha.
I had moved to Chicago for graduate school, and that's how I kind of, through a graduate residency, found my way into the role at what was Draft FCB, is now just FCB, a bigger agency there. Mm-hmm. And they offered me a job out of school, and I took it. And then I moved over. The head of my strategy department at FCB was starting to head up the strategy in a new agency called Cavalry and asked if I would like to join. And I thought that was an exciting opportunity to kind of, you know, help grow an agency from the ground up with a big client like MillerCoors.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a couple years, and then, you know, a bunch of different life circumstances and the call back home came, and I moved back home. I worked for Cavalry remotely for a while, and then with an old colleague of mine that I had worked with at United Way in Miami, the nonprofit, we decided to join forces and start our own business, which was basically a marketing and branding consultancy kind of focused on two different things. One was
I was going to say, we'll get to your whole path before. I was just asking how long you're
job. Sorry.
It's all good. No, it is interesting. But you say since October?
Yeah.
And could I ask, you said there are about 100 people there. How many do what you do?
Our team is, let's see. Mm-hmm. We're a team of about 5 people.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
And could you describe just a little bit more what strategist means? Like, for those of us who don't watch Mad Men all the time.
Sure. Well, I think you know, everyone probably experiences advertising in different forms, and what you guys see is the final product, but kind of the behind the scenes process is a big one with lots of people involved. So you have different departments. You have accounts or account management, which kind of runs the client relationship. You have new business, which obviously goes about kind of procuring new business for the agency. And then the middleman between the account team and the creatives who execute the strategy are the strategists, who are tasked with kind of finding the intersection between what's happening in culture, in consumer insight, and then where the brand has the potential to fit in a way that's relevant in people's lives. So there's a lot of kind of human behavior involved. I'm very fascinated by behavioral economics, so there's a lot of, you know, that I get to dabble in. But yeah, it's just kind of finding the right strategy for a brand that's going to make it most relevant, culturally speaking, most relevant for whatever the target audience is for that particular brand or initiative. So,
I took this, my very first interview was with a gentleman who worked for something vaguely related to that, but he was very much a data analyst who was, you know, had this massive spreadsheet with 500 variables. And yeah. Glad to get that. Like, how much of your work is sitting in front of a spreadsheet, and how much of it is more intuitive, or how do you actually do what you do?
So that part of the job is kind of my worst nightmare. I don't have a highly functioning mathematical brain. I like to think that I overcompensate on the other side. But different agencies kind of structure their departments differently. So I've been at agencies like Draft FCB, now FCB for instance, that their strategy department was comprised of what some might call traditional planners and then also kind of data analysts. So those two, or they called them consumer insights, although we were both responsible for working together to derive consumer insights. So you have, you know, I spend a lot of time looking for both for support for strategies that we come up with, both from a qualitative and a quantitative lens. But I am not, you know, I think there's kind of two types of strategists. There's the more data-driven, academic, analytical kinds, and then there's kind of the more creative-leaning kind. You know, I've always been, I mentioned songwriting, I think that lends itself to copywriting. I've always been a writer. I think, you know, a lot of strategy is storytelling. So that's kind of more where my role is. But, you know, we have access to resources that, you know, we mine for data for the kind of quantitative piece of the puzzle. But I think a lot of it is, you know, again, it's a lot of intersections. So for me, it's very much kind of the puzzle pieces. What numbers do you have as proof for what you feel intuitively and what you're hearing from a more qualitative standpoint from consumers and people?
Gotcha. So, hey, could you describe your typical day, or if the days vary too much, your typical week?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of what I love about the job is one day never looks like the next day. Uh-huh. You know, I'm in a role that actually requires quite a bit of travel, whether that's, you know, at different points in my career, it's been to listen in on focus groups, to moderate focus groups, for client meetings and presentations, depending on where clients are located.
And focus groups are where they get like 10 or 20 people in a room and interview them for a couple hours, right?
Yeah, and you sit behind the glass if you're just listening, or you sit with them and go through kind of a conversation, a discussion guide with them if you're moderating.
Gotcha.
To get more insight into, you know, whatever it is you're looking to uncover, or whatever hypothesis you're trying to test. Mm-hmm. So it changes. You know, it's also I'm across a bunch of different brands, so depends kind of production schedules and different initiatives underway. You know, I get to just dig into what's happening in different categories. So it might be in the research phase of, you know, it might be the developing of a learning plan and kind of you know, creating for clients what we think we need to do in order to arrive at the strategy. Then it's the actual executing of that strategy. It could be, you know, today I have to brief creative teams on a project, and then I have to get on a client call and present to, you know, kind of the different key stakeholders, the strategy that we're moving forward with and executing off of. So it's never, you know, I'll be in LA and Chicago and Minneapolis next week. So it's always different, which keeps you on your toes and keeps it interesting.
Cool. And just curious, because you said you're from Miami, that your company has a Hispanic roots, so to speak. Do you speak Spanish, or do you do any work in Spanish? Or is it like they have the Spanish people and the English people?
No, I mean, I spoke Spanish when I was a toddler. I unfortunately lost the ability because, you know, life took me in other places, and if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
And my life shifted to a much more Italian focus, given my sister lives in Rome with my niece. My fiance is Italian, so it definitely, there's more Italian spoken in my household, which is similar, but not quite the same. But in terms of work, you know, that they were hesitant at first about the fact that, in particularly in my role where you need to be able to really understand, you know, people and consumers, language, whether language would be an issue or not. And they kind of rolled the dice. And, you know, I joke that I'm the only gringa in the agency, which is really true. You know, it's very international. It's not just, you know, there are some Miami natives, but, you know, there's a lot of Brazilians, a lot of Argentinians, some Spaniards, but it really hasn't been an issue so far. I mean, I work on the, what you might say is work that's in Spanish, but I would say our strategy is kind of transcend language, and our approach, a lot of the time, you know, the way acculturation and the way the world is shifting, I don't think it's as black and white as, you know, if you're working on the Hispanic strategy for a client, it doesn't mean that the work is going to be in Spanish. It's more kind of context as a filter.
Sure.
So if you're in a very, you know, Hispanic kind of neighborhood, then it might make sense to have a billboard in Spanish. But, you know, the majority of, especially millennial U.S. Hispanics, actually prefer speaking English and are more receptive to advertising in English. So, you know, it's an interesting kind of mix and how we operate.
Sure. And hey, can I just ask, in terms of your work week, how many hours do you typically work in a week?
That's an interesting question. Advertising is pretty famous for being a bit grueling hours wise. Mm-hmm. I think that's a result of, you know, when you're in any kind of client services, that's just the nature of the beast. But beyond that, you know, advertising is a very creative environment. People are passionate about what they do. And that means that you have a bunch of people that are willing to burn the midnight oil. And, you know, we're up against a lot of deadlines and pitches and presentations. So, you know, technically my hours are from like 9 to 9:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. But that's usually not the case. You know, so, and then, you know, when you travel, you get up for a 7 o'clock flight and then you have client dinner. So, you know, there's definitely pretty lofty hours involved, but if you love what you do, it's not such a problem.
It does sound like you love what you do. You talked about the variety that in your job and the creativity. Is there anything else that makes you really excited to go to work?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that I had never really considered advertising growing up. I think, you know, music was such a passion that kind of took precedence over everything else. But, you know, I've always been a writer, and there's a lot of writing involved in my job, or at least how I've kind of approached my job. So, you know, it's, and had I not gone to Berkeley, sorry for the background noise, had I not gone to Berkeley, I likely would have majored in psychology somewhere else. So it's kind of this interesting combination of a bit of psychology, a lot of writing, and then just, it's almost like a puzzle, like figuring out how all the different pieces fit together and how you can creatively express them. So, you know, it just pulls in a lot of the kind of more fluffy skills that I've always excelled at versus the harder skills, like you were talking about analytics, which when required, I will, you know, I will put that hat on and do my best. But, you know, I definitely found a role that allows me to leverage the things that I enjoy doing and that I'm good at.
Great. Great answer. All right. Well, hey, at this point, why don't we take it back to 2006?
Sure.
So there you are graduating Berkeley, I assume, in the spring?
Yeah, I finished up a little bit early, but I wanted to stick around to walk with the rest of my class and whatnot. So that's what I did while making margaritas at the Cactus Club.
Okay, so you fit. In other words, you finished Berkeley, and you're like, you need money. So basically, where were you as you were finishing Berkeley? Because I'm guessing you were not thinking advertising.
No, I, you know, like a lot of people, I had kind of dreams of. I think my sights were set eventually on New York. Growing up, you know, when I was younger, I went to a performing arts high school, like a magnet school.
Okay.
And, you know, back then my sights were set on Broadway because I majored in musical theater. Then I quickly realized that I'm not much of an actress. And while I'm
You said you majored in musical theater? I thought you said you did music business.
I did. I was talking about high school.
Okay, got it. Sorry.
Yeah, so it was my kind of, I went back to the path, which I can, you know, we can, you know, skip forward, but...
Oh, no, no, please, just... please. Please, sorry, yeah, I just got mixed up. Did you know, by the way, Berkeley, because we're merging with Boston Conservatory, there will be Berkeley students majoring in music theater?
I actually didn't know that, but that's great. Happy to hear it. Cool. Watch out, Juilliard. yeah, but, that's cool. Well, you'll probably see a lot of kids from my high school down here in New World. Lots of talent there.
Excellent.
But, yeah, so, but, so the focus was musical theater, which eventually I realized that it was more like songwriting and jazz blues, which led me to Berkeley. But, you know, by the time I was graduating, it's tough. You know, my major was, you know, or my focus rather was a lot of music business management, and the entire industry was shifting at the time, you know, going digital. I had dreams of A&R at a label at one point, but that role kind of was no more. And then on the other side of things, I wanted to be a recording artist and songwriter.
You said a label at one point, you mean while you were still a Berkeley student?
Yeah. Like there were just a lot of, you know, kind of industry shifts happening. So, you know, the stableness and steadiness factor, I mean, that never goes hand in hand with a musician's life, but trying to figure out, you know, what specifically was going to come next. I didn't totally have that sorted out, but, you know, I thought maybe I would find a music industry job in New York. But first I thought I would, you know, music and travel were always kind of on par passion-wise for me. So I figured that while I figured out what was next, I would go take what my mom refers to as my victory lap. and I, after graduation, ran off to Australia to travel around for a while.
Nice.
Yeah. And then, you know, I, when I came back, I went to New York, but you know, it's, you get into music for a love of music, not for a love of, you know, kind of a secretarial position at a label or something related to music. So that was kind of a couple months in New York. That was a little discouraging.
So what was happening job-wise? In other words, were you still looking for work or had you found work at that point?
I mean, I taught, well, are we talking before graduation or after graduation?
After graduation.
After graduation. I taught voice lessons on the side for a little while, but I was looking for work somewhat unsuccessfully. So I started to broaden the places that I was looking a little bit. And, you know, New York isn't inexpensive. So I thought I would kind of come home to Miami and regroup a little bit. And while I was regrouping, I thought, you know, I would maybe volunteer, which that's how I landed at United Way, which is a big kind of global nonprofit, but each kind of chapter is autonomous. I sat with them to talk about volunteering, and they instead wanted to hire me. So I said, okay. That was an opportunity to kind of, again, just, they knew, they just had opened a huge, you know, $1 million project or multiple $1 million project, called the Center for Excellence in Early Education. And they just kind of knew that they needed help kind of marketing the program to get funding for it. And also there was like a demonstration school. So to kind of lure both students and teachers and, national experts, they needed a bunch of collateral materials and all sorts of things. So,
and they were just like, you're a college graduate, you'll do.
They kind of, I think just through the conversation, I kind of hit it off with them. I think they thought like, let's give her a try. You know, they gave me kind of a very broad coordinator title to start. And then I kind of molded the role into what I wanted it to be. And then I became their manager of communications. So yeah, I did that for like 3 years or so. And then I decided that, you know, it was an interesting realization. I think Berkeley is an amazing school in a lot of ways. I think it's a great brand. And, you know, I think in my industry, I look at a lot of things as brands. And what I realized was my music degree and my Berkeley degree says to a lot of people outside of music that it's like the cool factor. Everybody loves music. So it's interesting and it's cool and it's something to connect over. But as far as a job that, you know, lends itself to, you know, stability of some kind, and more than stability, but just any other avenue that's intellectually stimulating, I think I needed to kind of pair that Berkeley degree with something else, with another brand that lent kind of the she's smart cred with also like she's interesting and creative cred. So, you know, in a time when a lot of, you know, to me, what seems like master's degrees have kind of become commonplace, mm-hmm. versus just bachelor's degrees, I decided that, and I, you know, was fortunate enough with the support of my family to pursue a master's. And I kind of looked at it like, well, where would I want to live? And as far as places in the country go, Chicago was on the list. And I was like, okay, well, go ahead.
Just the master's you decided to get was basically in this field of advertising then?
I hadn't really decided on advertising yet. I was actually poking around, if I remember. I haven't thought about this in a while, but I was poking around. Again, I mentioned writing a lot. The idea of journalism, which was another industry that was, you know, going through a lot of changes given the, you know, proliferation of technology and digital. But I, you know, Medill at Northwestern University in Chicago is, you know, a renowned kind of journalism school that actually merged with the Integrated Marketing Communications Program. And as I kind of stepped foot into marketing through United Way, and the fact that they had kind of this journalism focus as well, that program really appealed. So I had kind of set my sights there. And, you know, it's a great school, a really well-reputed school. And I thought it was a long shot, but, you know, I made my case to them and they let me in. And that's when the ball got rolling towards my new career.
Right. So that was a 2-year program?
It was, I believe, 15 months.
Nice. You graduated. If you don't mind, even though it's a little repetitive, let's go chronologically through what happens.
Sure.
You finished that program, and did you have a job?
Yeah, the IMC program at Northwestern, part of it, which I think is great.
I'm sorry, IMC stands for?
Integrated Marketing Communications.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So, as part of the program, they require that you do what they call a graduate residency, which really is kind of a glorified term for an internship. But, you know, in many cases, they were paid, so that was great. And you could either do one as a group for different companies, or you could, there are a few opportunities where different places recruited. And, you know, everyone I knew was going to this kind of recruiting day at Draft FCB. And to the earlier point about, you know, strategy departments are often split into kind of data analytics and also strategic planning. But everyone, a lot of my friends were more on the analytical side of things, and they were going to learn about that role. But while I was there, I had heard about the strategy role and kind of read the job description, and I was like, oh, that sounds a lot like me. So, you know, it was a really insane recruiting process, harder than any kind of getting of a real job that I ever had. But like five rounds later, they selected me.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was like the first round on campus, then the second round, then on, you know, at their offices. And then I had to do like a case study homework assignment. And then their internship program was also kind of grueling. I was the one and only year that they decided to do what they called was a collabitation, which is kind of like Top Chef, but for strategic planners. And if you've never been a strategic planner, that could be a little daunting, but it was definitely really, really solid training.
To be collaboration, like you're working on a
like you have to, yeah, you have to partner with the people who are essentially in competition with you for a job.
Yikes.
So, yeah.
How does that
so
work?
So you can imagine. Not so well, which is why I think they discontinued that program in that sense. But, you know, there were a lot of, like, kind of people management apart from just the actual work that came with that experience. So that was great. But, yeah, they, you know, you get two reviews during that process. And if you get, I think it's like a 0 to 5 scale. And if you get a 5, then a job offer comes with it. And that was the case for me. So it was nice as people were kind of graduating and somewhere scrambling to find jobs. I had a nice cushy little back pocket job already lined up. So I just transitioned pretty easily. You know, I went back and I finished up the program because the residency happened over the summer. Mm-hmm. And I graduated in December of 2011. And then I started work at FCB.
FCB, you said you were there for how many years?
Good question. I want to say that would have been like 2011 through, I should have pulled out my resume. I think 2011 through 2013 is when I moved with the, a few folks, including the head of the strategy department, over to Cavalry. And then I was at Cavalry up until 2015.
And just remind me, what got you back to Miami? Was it just you missed the city, so you moved for that?
It was a combination of factors, a lot going on kind of with my family that I wanted to be here for. And then, you know, through all of the goings on with my family, I met the man who's now my fiance, which he's from Rome. He moved to Miami like maybe 6 years ago. So, you know, that was a compelling reason as well.
Absolutely. And just remind me, how did you get your current job?
So I was kind of doing my own thing. I started to mention that an old colleague of mine from my days at United Way, when she found out I was coming back to Miami, we had talked about wanting to do something kind of both entrepreneurial spirits. So we started a kind of branding consultancy for both on the helping nonprofits market themselves better and also with the goal of helping corporations with their kind of social good and social responsibility efforts.
Nice.
So, yeah, the idea was, I thought it was a great idea. I was hatching great ideas from good intentions, which again, I think definitely a timely idea, lots of support for why, but Miami is kind of an interesting town. And also I learned the lesson that as far as social responsibility goes, it's on brands' radar, it's on companies' radar, but it's not something that they prioritize enough that they're going to, you know, it's a hot button issue that they're going to say, let's hire a consultant for. So it's kind of the thing that would sit better in-house somewhere. But as I was kind of, you know, so, and it was a lot of work. And when you're working with nonprofits, they unfortunately don't have the funds to really pay you all that much for that work. So, you know, we kind of took a look at what the what kind of uphill battle we were facing. And we estimated that it was probably like a 5-year uphill battle, which in the grand scheme of things probably isn't that much, but we just weren't in a place in life where we were willing to, you know, suffer it out for that long. So I started to poke around and see what existed in Miami. And I actually didn't know about the community formerly known as La Comunidad, which, you know, it just won Multicultural Agency of the Year in Ad Age. It's won all of these awards through the years. But it really kind of locally was flying under the radar, but somebody kind of clued me into it. And I had seen that an old colleague of mine from Draft FCB had actually worked with the guy who's the head of strategy here. So I reached out to him. He sent a very, very kind, glowing review. And I came in and chatted with them. Then I came in and freelanced for like a day. And then I left. Then I left the country for a month. And on the last day of my travels, I got a call offering me the job, and I decided that I should take it. And here I am.
And there you are. Well, great. Yeah. Congratulations. Sounds like a very good, you know, path of a few twists and turns, but really primarily going in that same direction.
Yeah. So, and life's funny that way. You never know.
So just curious, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Doing the exact same job you're doing, or is there like a next step up from what you're doing?
I mean, there's of course different levels and titles within my current role, and it's always different at different agencies. And I've gone from, you know, strategic planner to senior planner to director back to senior planner. So, you know, is the dream to one day be chief strategy officer? Maybe. I don't really have a 5-year plan because, you know, I definitely am a believer in the saying that life is what happens when you're out making other plans. and I've witnessed that firsthand, and that's, I kind of love the serendipitous nature of life, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I'm very happy where I currently am. Like I said, I think it's a job that, you know, is always interesting. So I might try my hand at something else like I did recently and end up back in this field. But, you know, it's tough. I also like travel, you know, I'm always going to be a singer songwriter, you know, behind the scenes in the shower, in the car and at my keyboard at home. But, you know, travel is something that definitely, or wanderlust rather, is something that runs through my veins, from very early on. And given, you know, I kind of have a pretty global family, I don't know, you know, I don't even know where I'll be in 5 years.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of exciting to me.
Yeah, great answer. All right, so let's move on to the third part of the interview. And it sounds like you just may have partially answered it, but officially, what's your current relation to music?
So, you know, that's a piece. I think you mentioned it, like, okay, if you're a singer, that's something you always carry with you, hopefully, as long as some tragedy doesn't strike. But, you know, I think it's always a part of your heart and soul. And I think as far as my identity goes, that always makes its way into the conversation and story. I do long for a little bit more music in my life. I realized in my time at Berkeley that, you know, with a lot of people, I think, realize that there's a lot of luck that's required to make a career out of it beyond just talent. And as far as talent, you know, I wouldn't consider myself untalented, but, you know, I think you need a very thick skin. And I, for some reason, when it comes to music, I don't have that thick of a skin, maybe because it is so personal, but where I can stand and, you know, present in front of 400 people, there's a little stage fright that would sneak in for me. So that kind of dissuaded me from performing as much as I would like to. But, you know, when I watch, you know, when I go out and there's kind of a jazz band playing, or, you know, I hear the blues, I want to be there. I want to be up on that stage. So if I found myself in a circumstance where I had more time on my hands, that might be something that I pursued. But yeah, I mean, I'm a lover of music. I have music in my heart, but, you know, not so much career-wise.
Understood. All right. Next question for you is, as you're right, Berklee gives that one degree, a Bachelor of Music degree.
Right.
And perhaps some of us might have always studied exactly what we're doing now. But my question is, thinking back to your Berklee education, is there anything that you feel Berklee in particular did really well to prepare you for your current job and career?
I think unintentionally, yes. I think,
go on.
You know, no, I think
asking what
a lot
you
of,
got out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mentioned the performance piece, but I think in most careers, especially, you know, where there's a lot of presenting involved, how you present yourself, whether it's actually presenting to clients or whatever the case is. And so, you know, I think the performance aspect and all of the labs and all of the opportunities that are afforded to Berklee students to perform, I think that was a lot of good prep. I think for me personally, where music theory, like I said, I don't have a very mathematical mind. And I do view music theory as extremely mathematical, just you replace numbers with letters. So that was, you know, that was very challenging. And I think learning to take on obstacles and face things that are challenging to you and figuring out how to manage them and come out on top. If you do, you know, I'm a person that holds myself to pretty high standards. But, you know, it wasn't easy for me, certain classes. So, like, whether it was counterpoint or, you know, just the various theory classes we took. But, you know, it really forced that kind of regimen and practice and, you know, asking for help when I needed it, which is, I think is a good life lesson. Does that answer well?
No, that's great. So, hey, let's now do the flip side, which is, of course, you went to Berklee knowing you gave that one degree of Bachelor of Music. But is there anything where you look back at your Berklee education and you say, you know, it would have been really nice to have learned this thing and Berklee could have taught it to me and they didn't?
I think that when you're young and when music is your dream and passion and everyone kind of stands behind you and is supportive, and then this weird thing happens where you suddenly are this young adult and you're expected to have an income. And, you know, it's not easy in the world of music. I mean, you know, to, like I said, it's a lot of luck on the artistry side. And then in terms of actual paying jobs, they don't pay much or they're hard to come by. So I think just as much as kind of help and job prep and even, you know, encouraging people to think about outside of music or loosely related to music, what it is that they love, and maybe, you know, requiring students to maybe even do that sort of internship or residency in a field unrelated to music so that they have a little experience under their belt that isn't just solely related to music. I think that could have been helpful.
Gotcha. Good answer. Okay. Next question for you is, it sounds like you found a great career path. I can hear how much you like what you're doing. There are, as you can imagine, some other Berklee graduates who have not yet found that path, as well as perhaps people in their last year at Berklee looking at the big scary world. And for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, be open to everything. I think just because you're a musician and just because you studied music doesn't mean that you're a sellout, which, you know, I think even in my year, that was definitely like one of my best friends. I remember seeing him a couple years later and him kind of convicting me of being a sellout and, you know, like working for the man, which I think is kind of a juvenile attitude. I think you have to be, you know, open to just collecting experiences and, you know, poking around at what's out there. You don't know what you might stumble on and what you might love and where you might be able to kind of apply your background. Like, I've been in circumstances where I've helped write jingles for advertising, you know, so you never know where you're gonna end up, even if it's somewhere that's seemingly far away from music. There's a lot. Music isn't everything. I mean, you know, we all have soundtracks to our lives. I think it plays a part You know, I do. I believe that. So I think just being open to any little interest that you have and kind of pursuing opportunities and things that come up in that regard, and in meeting as many people as possible and always, you know, talking to them. You never, life's crazy like that. The random paths you take, you could turn to right and meet somebody that changes your life, or you could turn left and not. So I think just kind of being open is my best advice.
Great. And now we're at the final question, which is, you have the mic, so to speak. Is there anything you think we missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
I don't think so. I think that's a good set of questions. You know, I have kind of, you know, not, I wouldn't go as far as hate, but like a love, you would say a love-hate relationship with Berkeley, but it's mostly love. I think it's partly what has defined who I am, but I do think, you know, they kind of, I think it would be great if Berkeley could just kind of take ownership of what it is, and the fact that, you know, like I said, if through elementary school and high school, you know, kids are musicians and they have all of this opportunity and there's support for it, Berkeley has a responsibility in terms of helping people transition into, you know, adults that can fend for themselves. And it's not as easy as for kids that are coming out of kind of, you know, medical schools or, you know, accountant programs. So I just think, you know, the more Berkeley can do to kind of own that and remedy that, I think the better.
Sure. Well, the Berkeley Career Center is more active, and I would like to think that this interview you just did is a small piece of that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and to be fair, I really, and maybe, you know, I'm sure there's been attempts to engage alumni more, but I know, like, emails changed through the years, but I admittedly have been kind of removed from all the changes that have taken place, and you even mentioned how, you know, the merging with, I think you said Boston Conservatory. So lots of, I'm sure lots of shifts and changes and for the better are underway. So I'm happy to hear it.
Did you hear about the skyscraper?
No, tell me.
Oh, well, I'm perhaps being a little bit indulgent calling it that. But let's see, test your memory. Do you recall right near, let's say, the main 150 Mass Ave building, which had a lot of classes attached to Berkeley Performance Center? Then the next building over from there had like a McDonald's, was this one-story building.
Sure.
So they knocked that, Berkeley bought the property, knocked that down, and they built a 16-story skyscraper.
Wow.
That the top 12 stories are dormitories, so now every first-year student who wants to can live on campus. And then
that's impressive.
Have, like, there's a new cafeteria, and then down in the lower levels, they have multiple state-of-the-art recording studios.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, that's
happy
been
to
like,
hear.
That's been their big showpiece. That was, I think, completed about 2 years ago.
Nice. And, well, congratulations to all.
Yeah, and I guess the update is, did you hear about the Valencia campus?
Yes, I did hear about that.
Okay.
That's wonderful.
That's a big good thing. And then Berkeley has just started offering a couple of master's degree programs in Boston. So
okay.
Things are
nice. All good things.
Yeah. Hit the website sometime. You'll see.
I will, for sure.
Well, hey, thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Absolutely.
Look for a message from me in the very near future in LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.